our next guest, I think that you're really going to enjoy this guy. He was an assistant to the Brain and Research Behavioral Research Department at Colorado's Dormant Brain Research and Development Laboratory. What does that mean? Well, nothing on its face. Combine it with music. He's also an artist. And so the connection between brain, between music, between your potential, what you can do, and being able to unlock that hidden potential that we have in our brains. I think we all feel like, you know, some days I can do amazing things. There are days I don't feel so good. Well, Neil has a way to simply, easily tap in to your brain potential. Very happy to welcome to the Power Hour, Neil Slade. Welcome, my friend.
All right. Thank you very much.
Your website, in case anybody is interested, brainradar.com, brainradar.com, and you got a couple books. We'll talk about that. What is brain music?
Well, what is brain music? Well, I have a degree in music education and in music performance. So, and I've been a professional musician since I was 13 years old, among all the other things that I do. And what I've always tried to do in creating my own original music is to create music that stimulates the brain in ways that commercial music do not. So, for example, if you listen to the radio is geared to play music that appeals to the widest possible audience. It's not geared to really stimulate creativity as such. When I create music, there are certain parameters within that music that help stimulate your brain in ways that, you know, Taylor Swift, not to say that she's bad, or the Grateful Dead, or anyone else in commercial music, that kind of music will not stimulate your brain in the same way that good brain music will do. Brain music actually gets your brain to work better because it makes your brain explore and work in new ways that it may not be used to working.
You talk about commercial music, pop 40 music, what have you.
Yeah. And I've got nothing against pop music. Don't get me wrong there.
No, you don't have to apologize here.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm trying to ask the difference.
An analogy might be good. Pop music might be like French fries. French fries are good. They taste good. They're good to have once in a while, but you don't want to make a steady diet of French fries because it'll kill you, right? Good brain music is like nutritious food that tastes good but is also good for you at the same time. So brain music will... I'll give you a couple of parameters, for example. A good piece of brain music will have elements in it, either melodic elements or harmonic elements that will be new to you, that will be something that you'll listen to say, hey, you know, I've never heard something quite like that before. This sounds a little bit different, right? So when you hear, the most advanced part of your brain craves new information, and it needs unfamiliar information in order to grow. In order to grow more brain connections, you have to be exposed to new information. If you're only exposed to the same stuff over and over again, your brain won't grow. And in fact, it will atrophy. Now, if you apply that to music, if music it challenges your brain in some way, either by different kind of lyrics or different type of melodic structure or different type of harmonic structure or different type of rhythmic structure, then it's challenging your brain while you listen to it. And by that effect of challenging your brain, it actually helps your brain to build new synaptic connections, and it builds your brain power in that way. It's like lifting weights or swimming, or like an exercise. If you, for example, if you swim, and I'll give you a good example of this, and then I'll shut up. I had a friend, and he used to go to the swimming pool every day, and he would swim the same number of laps every day. Well, he ended up gaining weight. You would think, well, if I swim 10 laps a day, I'll lose weight. No, not if you're swimming the same 10 laps. Your body adjusts to it. And then it doesn't burn any extra calories. You got to keep pushing yourself a little bit. So the same thing is true whether it deals with music or art or information of any type, unless you're pushing your brain to develop and you expose it to new things that you're unfamiliar, things that you're not familiar with, your brain won't grow and it will atrophy. So if you want your brain to work at its best, you got to keep seeking out new territory.
Okay, let me ask a question. Let me kind of go backwards. I probably should ask some of these questions at first.
No, ask them in any order.
Commercial music, a Pop 40. We're not criticizing it. We're discussing the French fries.
Yeah.
So if the type of music that you create, the brain music, if it actually stimulates your brain, stimulates your potential, does commercial music then unstimulate, destimulate your potential?
Well, you know, if you listen to the same Led Zeppelin song every day, it's going to cause your brain atrophy because you're not exposing it to new information.
Huh.
I'm not saying I love Led Zeppelin. You know, I mean, there's some punk music that I like. I like, you know, noisy stuff. I like all kinds of music. There's not one kind of music that's better for you than another type of music. What is important is that you expand your horizon, that you go into unfamiliar territory, that you just don't listen to the same stuff over and over again. So, you know, with that in mind, there's no such thing as bad music. What's bad is if you stagnate. You know, a pond that doesn't have flowing water stagnates, and that's when the mosquitoes begin to breed, and that's when the water becomes polluted. In order for water to be clear and healthy to drink, it's got to flow. It's got to have a flow to it. It's got to move. It can't be stagnant. So if your habits, whatever they are, doesn't matter whether it's physical exercise or intellectual exercise or your hobbies, if your activity stagnates, that's bad for your brain. If you move into different territory, if you expand, like the universe is expanding, so the universe is healthy. If your own personal universe expands, that will be good for your brain, and that will be good for your health. Does that make that a little more clear?
Yes. So what is it about music that is so enticing to our brains? I mean, obviously we're obsessed with music, with entertainment in general, but music especially. What is it that makes it so appealing to our brains?
Well, yeah, it's very interesting when archaeologists and paleontologists look at the remains of human beings, if they go back in time and they find the earliest evidence of human civilization, sure enough, they find musical instruments that go back tens of thousands of years. You can go back and go into a cave where there are bones that are 10,000 years old of human remains. They will find a flute and that still plays. You can pick up one of these 10,000 year old flutes and play on it today, and the holes that are drilled in the bone tube will play a pentatonic scale, the same type of scale that rock and roll guitar players play on their guitars. The 10,000-year-old flute will play that very same scale. And people who do brain research long ago realized that music is one of the few activities that stimulates the entire brain. If you read a book, you'll see activity in a certain area of the brain primarily. If you do physical exercise, you'll see a lot of activity in one or two selective areas. But music, for some reason, activates both the very advanced parts of the brain, the primitive parts of the brain, the motor cortex, the part of the brain that is responsible for physical movement. It's a universal brain stimulant. So those are two very interesting things to keep in mind in regards to why people like music, because it's universal in stimulating the brain, and we've been doing it for tens of thousands of years.
You said the advanced part of our brain. What does that mean? Why advanced part?
Well, when I say the advanced part of your brain, I'm talking about evolutionarily the most advanced part of our brain. Our brain, Dr. Paul McLean, back in the 1960s, was a brain researcher, and he was trying to figure out how all the different parts of the brain relate to each other. So he devised a kind of nomenclature that divided the brain up into three main sections. And it's good for generally understanding how the human brain works. There are different models of looking at the human brain, but his is one that is very easy for people to understand. It's not exactly accurate, but it's close enough, and it's still used by a lot of people. And he calls this the triune brain model. And he divides the human brain up into three sections. And you've probably heard these terms. The reptile brain. Have you ever heard of that before?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, the reptile brain is that part of our brain that in function and in appearance resembles the brains of reptiles, like snakes and turtles. Okay? And it's the innermost part of our brain. It's also known as the brain stem. And what that part of your brain does is it processes very basic functions. It regulates your breathing, your body temperature, your heart rate. It functions at the same level as a snake brain. It doesn't process any emotions. It doesn't allow you to calculate things. It doesn't process language or math or anything. It just is basic survival. And the old neurologist joke is the reptile brain computes the four F's of human behavior. Feeding, fighting, fleeing, and reproduction. Okay, so that's the neurology. That's what
reproduction doesn't start with an F, now, Neil. Neil, reproduction
show,
does not start with an F.
Yeah, well, this is a family show.
Yes, it is.
So,
well, that's what we're talking about, reproduction.
Yeah, anyway, that's right. So that's what the reptile brain, that's the most primitive part of your brain. All right, now, surrounding this reptile brain core is another section that Paul McLean called the mammal brain. And the technical term for this part
is... Let's pause right there.
All right. Well,
let's pause right there. We got the reptile brain. We'll get the other parts after the commercials. BrainRadar.com is the website. We're going to get into his book, Frontal Lobe Supercharged, and Tickle Your Amygdala. Amygdala. I think I pronounced it right. Maybe I was close. We'll get Neil to correct me on the other side. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. ThePowerHour.com. Welcome back. We are still talking to Neil Slay. BrainRadar.com is the website. His book, he's written several books, but one of the most popular, Frontal Lobe Supercharge. Don't we all need a frontal lobe supercharge? I think so. We're talking to Neil. Neil, we're talking about the different parts of the brain. You mentioned the reptile part, and then go ahead.
Why this is important, because in order to use more of your brain potential and use your brain, you got to know which part is which. It's kind of like in order to drive a car, you got to know where the gear shift is and what it does and where the gas pedal is and where the key goes. Same thing with your brain. If you don't know about how your brain puts together, it's kind of like driving with a blindfold on. So that's why I'm explaining these basic parts of the brain, and I'll keep it short. So we were talking about the reptile brain. Now, surrounding the reptile brain is another part called the mammal brain. And what the mammal brain is, it adds on some higher developments of behavior and thinking. So primarily with the mammal brain, you know, where reptiles, generally speaking, they lay their eggs and they split. Kids, you're on your own. You know, turtles dig a hole in the sand, they lay the eggs, and they go away, and they never see their little hatchlings. Same thing with snakes. And most reptiles, generally speaking, they lay their eggs, and then they abandon the eggs. Kids, you're on your own. Mammals, on the other hand, they raise their young, and they nurture them. And there's emotions that are added on. You love your children. So this limbic system, it's also called, or the mammal brain, adds on basic social behaviors and nurturing and emotions. So that's where those things are located in your brain, generally speaking. Now, surrounding. Now, if you put the mammal brain and the reptile brain together, it only makes up about 10-15% of the human brain. The other 85% of the brain is what's called the primate brain. And that's the wrinkly part, you know, when you see Frankenstein's brain in a jar and you see all the wrinkly lobes. What you're looking at there is the primate brain. And that adds on all of the higher brain functions that we relate to as human beings. Things like language and math and fine motor skills, the ability to, you know, I call it CICIL, C-I-C-I-L, creativity, imagination, cooperation, intuition, and logic. Those are all computed in this primate brain. And the most advanced part of that primate brain, the one-third front part of the brain, everything under your forehead, that's called the frontal lobes. And that allows you the highest level of thinking and planning and behavior, concepts of time, imagination, true cooperation, planning. That's all done in the frontal lobes, okay? Now, if you want to really control your brain and use most of your potential, it all depends on you being able to turn on more frontal lobes types of processes and overcome the limitations of the reptile brain and the mammal brain. And what does that is this little switch right in the middle of your brain, and you've got one, and it's about the size of the tip of your thumb, and it's called the amygdala. And you've got an amygdala in the right half of your brain and amygdala in your left half of your brain. And by sheer thought, you can concentrate on your brain and cause the amygdala to click forward, just like a light switch on your wall. It clicks forward, or you can tickle it forward, and that turns on frontal lobes processes. So, for example, if you're frustrated or if you're angry or if you're bored, what you do is you use a mental process and you tickle your amygdala to click it forward, and that turns on more frontal lobes advanced brain behaviors. And that's basically okay. The crux of it.
All right, I'm totally curious now. This amygdala that you're describing, you turn it on? I mean, what are we talking about here?
Well, the amygdala is like a rheostat. It's like a light switch on your wall. So when the light switch is down, there's no electricity flowing to the light bulb on the ceiling. So the room is dark, or it's only lit by ambient light. When you click your light switch in the up position, what that does is that allows electricity to flow into the wires and go to the light bulb. And the light bulb turns on and it lights up the whole room, and then you can see what's going on in the room. Now, the amygdala is just like a little light switch with an infinite number of positions between off and on. And so when you tickle your amygdala, what that does is it allows more electrical chemical activity to occur in the frontal lobes part of your brain, the most advanced part of your brain. It's like turning on the light bulb in your brain. That's the function of the amygdala. Now, the amygdala when it's clicked backwards, the reptile brain is on, and you only compute me, 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 self-defense, counterattack behaviors. But when your amygdala is tickled forward,
hold that
then
thought.
You can compute all kinds of advanced types of thinking and processes.
If you remember him from a couple of years ago, and also the furnaces will be available. Very high-quality products last a long time, extremely efficient. You know how expensive it is to heat a room? You want to heat your house cheaply? You know, you get about five or six of them Amish heaters, and then the rooms you don't use, you turn them off, what have you. Well, this is like those Amish heaters, except much higher quality, lasts longer, and more efficient. You know how much it costs to heat your house? You do the math. You cut that by $25, $50 a month with these heaters, it adds up really quick, and it lasts years upon years upon years. We're doing a special. Of course, we got the gift certificates coming out for the holidays, for Christmas, what have you. Fantastic gifts. So if you buy a Sun Air Purifier or the furnace this week, we're going to give you a gift certificate for free. I don't know the dollar amount. Jay will have to tell you that, but we're going to give you a gift certificate you can use for yourself to buy other things, give it as a gift, Christmas present, birthday, anything, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever, just because. Just because it's a gift of good health. So check that out. Of course, all the Mother Earth minerals. We really appreciate your purchases, your donations. We need them. So think about some of the things you need and think about what you can buy from us for our show, for our broadcast, for your broadcast, because we're here because of you. So all the sales, Numana and Mother Earth minerals and the Sun Air Purifiers. We're going to have Dale on tomorrow. We're talking to, right now, Neil Slade from BrainRadar.com. His book, Frontal Lobe Supercharged. I got that one. That's the one book. But Tickle Your Amygdala. Amygdala. Is that close,
Neil? You said it perfectly.
I am. You can't teach. Maybe I switched my amygdala on during the break.
I think you must have.
Let's get into, people want to be able to use their brain optimally. Why is their brain slow? They can't calculate. And then how do we click it into a better state musically or whatever and easily, uh-huh, like you tell us?
Well, I studied with a fellow named T.D. Lingo for 11 years at the Dormant Brain Research and Development Laboratory. And what Lingo used to tell us, even way back in the 60s and 70s, and he goes way back, was that the human brain is 90% dormant, that we only use 10% of our brain. Now, literally, that's not true. We use all of our brain to some degree throughout the day. We use some parts of it more than other parts of it. That's why brain scanners are able to work, because they can detect which part of the brain is more active than other parts of the brain. The brain potential in every human being is infinite. We don't know what the brain is capable of. What we do know is that it never says hard drive full. You may get tired and you need to take a rest and a break, but there's no limit to what the human brain is capable of. We're still exploring that as a species, okay? So the human brain really has infinite potential. And everybody's heard the folk saying, you only use 10% of your brain. And really, that's what that saying is about. It's really saying to you that you have infinite potential. And any percentage of your brain that you use, any percentage of infinity, is an infinitely small percentage. So not only do we not only use 10%, we don't even use 1% of our brain. We use an infinitely small part of an infinitely big potential. Okay, so that's the main thing to keep in mind. You have every single person on the planet has infinite brain potential. Now, the question is, why are we all walking around as Einsteins and Isaac Newtons and geniuses? Well, the reason is because we are culturally conditioned to not tap into that potential. People who would have power over us want us to stay dumb. They don't want us to have a lot of information, because with a lot of good information comes power. And if we look at the behaviors of animals in the animal kingdom, it's kind of a might makes right type of thing. People want to hold on to their power. People who have power want to keep other people ignorant and keep them from information that will give them power. So we are culturally conditioned to use less of our brain than we are capable of doing. Does that answer that question of why we don't use our brain?
Well, when you say culturally, you mean I have a hard time understanding that. Culture makes us not use our brain. Let me put it this way. How do we reach our potential? Let's just go there. How do we reach our brain?
You reach your potential by identifying which part of your brain is active. Okay? So the difference between human beings that have infinite brain potential and animals, which are limited in their ability to develop and create, is that we've got these wonderful frontal lobes that are capable of creativity and imagination and logic. So as an individual, what you have to do is know when you are clicked backwards into that 10% reptile brain, because the reptile brain and the mammal brain together only make up a small fraction of our brain. If you want to have more brain power, you need to use that other 85% of your brain mass, which is in your primate brain and in your frontal lobe. So you have to be able to look at yourself and say, am I clicked backwards into 10% of my brain, or am I clicked forwards into that other 85% of my brain? And the way that
works
is... Excuse me?
How will we know we're in reptile brain?
Well,
if I'm in reptile brain, how will I know?
Sure. Because the amygdala, through your amygdala, because the amygdala not only is a click switch, but it's also like a thermometer or a thermostat. It tells you through your emotions which part of your brain is active. As it turns out, when you are clicked backwards into your reptile brain, and your frontal lobes are turned off, your brain gives you negative emotional feedback. Either you feel angry, or you feel fearful, or you're bored. Negative emotions. If you are feeling negative emotions and you're unhappy, that's your brain telling you through your amygdala that you are only using a small percentage of your brain, that you're stuck in the reptile brain. Because the reptile brain computes fight or flight. It computes self-defense and counterattack behaviors. And these are all reflected in negative emotions. Now, when you're using your frontal lobes, when you're using the most advanced part of your brain rewards you by giving you positive emotions. You feel excitement. You feel happiness. You feel love. And the reason for that is simple. Nature wants you to survive. So when you're only using 10% of your brain, when you're not tapped into your infinite potential, your brain gives you negative emotions because you want to avoid negative emotions. It's encouraging. It's telling you, don't be stuck in your reptile brain because it's not going to make you happy. If you want to feel happy and satisfied and complete and love, you've got to click into the more advanced part of your brain. And if you do that, your brain will give you reward. Does that make sense?
Yes, okay. So I can get that. So let me bounce this back to you. You tell me where I'm right or wrong.
Okay.
Anytime you have an emotion like anger, you're upset. Now, that may be different. We can have what you call righteous indignation. You can have a reaction where you have to go... I can understand. If you got to go fight a situation, that puts you into the reptilian brain. So if I have an emotion like anger, I'm upset, I'm anxious, I'm on edge, I'm nervous, those are all putting me in this reptilian like a snake, kind of like brain where I'm acting just like a snake.
That's right. And what that does is that indicates that you're not using all of your available brain power. When you use your...
All right, now when I feel happy, when I feel love, when I feel satisfied, when I feel potential, when I feel optimistic, I've used a different part that I've opened up now to the wider part of our brains. Now, how do we click this amygdala on?
There's many, many ways to do it, and that's what I put in my books. And it's on my website for free. You don't even have to buy anything from me. The books are supplementary material. But if you go to my website, you'll get lots of ideas of how to tickle your amygdala forward. And I say tickle your amygdala... Because when you get tickled, you laugh and you smile, right? Okay, so I'll give you a very, very simple way.
Examples.
I'll give you a very simple way. Imagine you've got a feather. Okay, now, first you've got your amygdala. You've got two amygdala, one in the left hemisphere of your brain and one in the right hemisphere, in the right and left sides of your brain. And your amygdala are located about 1 inch inside each temple. So if you hold your fingers right in about an inch in front of your ear and you go inside an inch... That's where your amygdala is. And if you go to my website, you'll actually see pictures of where the amygdala is located. Okay? All you have to know is...
Okay, there's the music.
All right. We'll finish
what happened at the
break.
On the other side, you tell us how to tickle our amygdala. We get and how your music comes into this.
I will do that.
Neil Slade, brainradar.com is the website, brainradar.com. We are the Power Hour. You are the Power Hour. ThePowerHour.com. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. One more segment with Neil Slade. BrainRadar.com is the website. It's good to meet him. Good to have him here. Neil, let's talk about this tickle your amygdala. Amygdala. My amygdala.
Right.
Let's talk about turning on our amygdala, where your music comes in, and what does that mean for us?
Okay. So let let me again, let me encourage people to go to brainradar.com, and there's a link. It says Find Your Amygdala Here. And if you click on that link, you'll see a picture of the amygdala and where it's located. But if you just know the rough area, 1 inch inside each temple, that's close enough. Okay, so what you're going to do is you're going to close your eyes, and you can do this anytime, any place. You could do it while you're driving your car. I wouldn't suggest you close your eyes while you're driving, but you can do it while you're waiting in line at the DMV, in a waiting room. You can do it while you're in bed ready to go to sleep. Anytime, any place. This is the simplest way to tickle your amygdala and get that energy flowing into the most advanced part of your frontal lobes, your brain. Close your eyes right now if you're listening to the show, and imagine you're holding a feather in one of your hands. And let's say it's a multicolor feather, all the colors of the rainbow. And pretend, all you have to do is imagine, pretend that you can reach in through your forehead, and with the tip of your feather, you're going to touch that little amygdala button, which is about the size of an almond or the size of the tip of your thumb. And you're just going to take the tip of that feather, and you're going to go on the left side amygdala, you're going to go, tickle, 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 tickle. You're just going to pretend you're tickling that little amygdala button. And then you're going to go to the right side of your brain, and with the tip of your feather, you're going to go, tickle, 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 tickle. Just by doing that alone, just by imagining you have a feather and that you're tickling that amygdala organ on the left and right hemisphere, that alone will cause an increase in electrical, chemical activity to occur in your frontal lobes. And that will turn on more of your brain potential just by imagining you're tickling that with a feather. And they have proven that using your imagination in brain scans at Stanford University, just by using your imagination, that will cause an increase in frontal lobes activity alone, just by using your imagination in that way. So that's one way to tickle your amygdala. And there's countless ways.
What does that mean?
So, it means when you tickle your amygdala,
you've activated this frontal lobe. Okay, what is that different for me? Does that mean I can perform better? What does this mean?
Yes, it means you can solve problems better. It means you can use your imagination better. It means that you can plan better. Everything that you want to do with your brain in a better way by activating your frontal lobes, it's like turning on. Look, your brain has 200 million neurons in it, 200 billion neurons, pardon me, 200 billion neurons. If you are clicked backwards into your reptile brain and your frontal lobes are inactive, you're only using 10% of your available neural connections. Well, you want to use all of your brain. You want to turn on the most advanced part of your brain so that you can have better planning, so that you can have better problem solving, that you can have better creativity. And by doing that, you also, in tandem, will automatically have more positive emotions. And everybody wants to feel better. So by using more of your brain, specifically by activating more of your frontal lobe's potential, you will have, in turn, better creativity, better planning, better problem solving. You'll be able to see cause and effect. You'll be able to actually see what's going to happen in the future. You'll understand how things are all connected. And that's why you want to tickle your amygdala to send more electrical, chemical activity to occur in the most advanced part of your brain, which is your frontal lobe.
Then where does your music come in? How does that?
Well, music is computed by the primate brain and the frontal lobes. So brain music, again, there are many different things that will stimulate your frontal lobes. When you access new verbal information, let's say you learn a new language, that activates more of your frontal lobes, and that in turn will make your brain work better. When you do certain types of physical activity without strain, if you do some type of aerobic exercise, if you do yoga, if you do meditation, this will activate your frontal lobes in a positive way that will cause your whole global brain function to work better. if you listen, music has the same effect in terms of turning on more brain potential. Music is one of the best things. Listening to music, and especially playing music, learning music, is one of the best activities that you can do to expand your brain potential. And especially if you are approaching music in a way, as I've stated earlier in the program, that is expanding your horizons when you're opening up new frontiers. If you just listen to the same old music over and over and over again, that's not going to be good for your brain. Brain music means music that is going into new uncharted territory that challenges your brain. So it can be jazz music, it could be punk music, it could be rock and roll, it could be classical, it could be country. The key there is it should challenge your brain in some way and be, have new unfamiliar elements. And that's what real brain music is all about.
Well, very interesting. Which book would you got two books that you're promoting. You've written several, but which one, what are they going to learn when they read these books?
What I recommend to people is to get one of two books. One is called The Frontal Lobe Supercharge, and it's a book that I wrote 30 years ago, and it's still in print, and it's called The Frontal Lobe Supercharge, and it's a very, very easy-to-understand book. It has kind of fun illustrations in it, and you can read that, and you could, and there's a chapter with many different ways to click to tickle your amygdala, and it's a very basic book. Now, the book that's called Tickle Your Amygdala goes into much more depth in terms of how the brain works and how tickling your amygdala works. And I also have 52 interviews with some very famous people that are very creative. Josh Blue, the comedian, is a friend of mine, and we have, I've got a chapter with an interview with Josh Blue. I've got a chapter with Terry Jones from Monty Python's Flying Circus, and a lot of other people in science and in literature and in music and in medicine, and it sort of has 52 interviews with real creative thinkers, and they all talk about how the brain is related to their activity. So either Frontal Lobe Supercharge or Tickle Your Amygdala, either one is a good book to start with.
The website is brainradar.com. Neil Slade, it's been a pleasure meeting you, and very interesting information, my friend.
The hour just flew by, and it was a pleasure for me as well.
Oh, we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you so much.
All right, nice to see you.
Ladies and gentlemen.